in the 31st lesson in the book of Judges. And I want to invite you to open up your Bibles again to the book of Judges, chapter 16. We will begin at verse 31. But before I go there, I want to tell this to you. We have just, as we ended the last lesson, Samson had died. He had pushed the columns down, and Samson had died. And he had also killed 3,000 Philistines at his death, more than he had ever killed in his life. And the lords who had made Delilah wealthy were all now dead. You remember, they made her wealthy beyond really all imagination. The Philistine elite were dead. The Philistine oppression of Israel was now dead. The cycle of sin, of the sixth cycle of sin of Israel, of the oppression that came along with it, was dead. But Samson was also dead. The hero of the story had plunged himself into death. He was willing to give up his life to save Israelite lives in the future. And with the knowledge of his certain death, he was ready to gain the victory over the Philistines that had lorded over Israel for 40 years. Now we come to Samson's last rites here in chapter 16 and verse 31. Then his brothers and all his father's household came down, took him, brought him up, and buried him between Zorah and Eshtaol in the tomb of Manoah his father. Thus he had judged Israel 20 years. Some will look at this verse and say that Samson had some brothers. But we must remember that Mr. and Mrs. Manoah, his parents, were barren until they had Samson. Now, in other parts of the scripture, being barren means that Mrs. Manoah was almost past, or maybe even past, the ability to carry a child. So Samson's birth was really a miracle birth. And further, the use of the word brothers or brethren in Israel usually meant men who were descendants of Jacob. They were really cousins, but they were probably members of the tribe of Dan. Now, they could have been members of some of the other tribes too, because they were all cousins. But Israelite, anytime you see the word brethren used in the New Testament or the Old Testament, it is always a reference to Israelites with Israelites. It is never, ever, anywhere inside the Scripture, the Old Testament or New Testament, have anything to do with Israelites and Gentiles, or the Israelites and the heathen. Brethren is used exclusively between Israelite relationships. So, then the tribe of Dan was split into divisions by families. You see, you have the tribe of Dan, you have these families. Manoah's family came to retrieve, that means the cousins, came to retrieve Samson's body along with other Jews of the tribe of Dan. They buried Samson near the same place where the Spirit of the Lord first came upon Samson, and we learned that in Judges chapter 13, verse 25. In addition, they also buried Samson in the tomb of his father Manoah. Now, his mother could have been there too. She may have already died. But this tells us something. Manoah died after Samson began his 20 years of judgment on the Philistines. And so, the time of the called judges recorded in the book of Judges is over. Every judge that's going to be called by the Lord, that's going to be mentioned in the book of Judges, that time is over. Now, I want to tell you this, though. Samson was still alive. Samuel was alive. He was an adult working in the complex, around the temple complex, with Eli as he grew into adulthood. And Samson was about, Samuel was about 39 years old. So he is already old enough to be seen and viewed as a judge in the nation of Israel. But Samuel, why did I bring up the name Samuel? Because he's writing this book of Judges for us. He's recording this. He is actually about the same age, or maybe just a hair older or maybe a hair younger than Samson was. Now, the future king Saul, by the way, was also alive. He was about 27 years old when Samson dies. And within 3 years, he will become king. It's just the way the math of the layout of all the dates and numbers and the time markers all the way through coming out of Egypt, all the way to this point and into 1 and 2 Samuel and 1 and 2 Kings, when you lay these time markers out, that's where we are. When Samson dies, King Saul is going to be made king about 3 years later. We've just finished chapter 16. So with 3 years to go until Saul became king, the writer here in chapter 17 through chapter 21 is going to tell us about what's going on in those 3 years and all the evil that occurred in Israel without a judge, but not under the oppression of any other nations. The writer will give us a review of what I call the sway of Israel's downfall without a leader in the coming last chapters, verses 17 through 21. So the six cycles of Israel's sin, where the Lord sent a foreign nation to oppress and control Israel, they're over. They ended with the last deed and the death of Samson. So in total, over 339 years since Joshua's death, Israel was taken over and ruled by a foreign nation for 133 years spaced out. In between was a judge who ruled. With the help of the Lord and His appointed judges, Israel was able to oust those six foreign nations from their land who ruled at different times and be ruled by judges for 206 years. Now here's an interesting point. When each judge died and Israel began to sin again with the worship of Baal and Ashtaroth, when you do the math and you lay everything out, a sabbatical year occurred within the next 18 months after the death of the judge. If you remember, Moses introduced the sabbatical year to be observed every 7 years when the Israelites entered the Promised Land. There had not been a sabbatical year any time before. Even when they were in the wilderness at Mount Sinai, there was no sabbatical year yet. The sabbatical year was to start in the seventh year after they entered the Promised Land. When Joshua took over as leader, the Israelite nation crossed the Jordan River, took Jericho first, then they blundered when they were trying to take the village of Ai, but then they came back to Ai and they took it. The camp moved to Shechem, where, as you remember, the Deuteronomy 28 passage of the blessings and the curses were re-announced. Moses told him what to say in Deuteronomy 28, but here at Shechem, they pronounced those blessings as they were ordered by Moses. And the law was read to them, to the entire nation. Everyone was there. They heard the complete law again. They had heard it with Moses in his last 30 days. And now, within the year, they hear it again. And that starts the first year of the sabbatical year. Now, they're not going to celebrate the sabbatical year that year. That's the reading of the law. 7 years later will be the sabbatical year. And although the nation could not allow that land to rest that very first year because they did not control the Promised Land at that time, they would ultimately have all the Promised Land in their control by the end of the fifth year after hearing the law under Joshua that first year. At that time, the men whose families were left on the east side of the Jordan River in that fifth year were allowed to return home, and all the rest of the camp was allowed to disband and go to their new homes on the east side of the Jordan River and on the west side of the Jordan River, and the land was full of bounty for all the Israelites. Truly they were eating from crops they did not plant, just as the Lord had promised. However, about 18 months later, the sabbatical year arrived. It was the seventh year since the reading of the law at Shechem. In that first year, that year the whole nation lived off what they collected the year before, and they did not plant or harvest at all. The land was allowed to rest. Sabbath means to rest and to grow wild. All debts were forgiven among the people, and all bond servants were released from their pledges. It was the first sabbatical year celebrated in full according to the instruction through Moses. Everyone also heard the law read that year. They heard again the Ten Commandments and all the rest of the supporting statutes, ordinances, as well as the covenant from the Lord. What was the purpose of the sabbatical year? It was to make sure that every generation heard and knew the law of the Lord and what He required. And looking back through the study presented in this book of Judges by our writer, it is easy to quickly see that when a judge died, the people began to sin. But the Lord did not wait too long for them to hear His word read to them. He had designed the sabbatical year for this purpose. The judge died on the Lord's will, in His timing, so that in each cycle of sin that began in Israel, within the next year and a half, the sabbatical year would occur, and the people would hear again the word of the Lord and would know that they were sinning against Him. Then shortly after they heard the word and they did not respond to the word by stopping their worship of foreign gods, He sent the foreign nations to control Israel, just as He promised He would do. And with the death of Samson, the Philistines were ousted. But Samson did not continue to judge Israel, as did the rest of the judges following their victories. It was a new time. Did Israel have a judge? Absolutely, yes. His name was Samuel. But because Samuel is our writer of this book, he did not name himself as a judge in this book. We will learn that Samuel was the judge sent by the Lord after Samson in the book of 1 Samuel, when the prophets named Gad and Nathan completed the recorded manuscript after Samuel's death. Samuel is still alive at the death of Samson. He saw all that happened with Samson. They were close to the same age. He also knew about the story of Ruth that took place during the last, get this, three cycles of Israel's sin. Now, it had to be three cycles because the book of Ruth is about Boaz and Ruth, and Ruth going over to be in the Moabite area and then coming back to the Bethlehem area and marrying Boaz, and then they have Obed, and they have Jesse, and then Jesse has David. In order for those men to be born and all that to work out right, you have to have at least three cycles of Israel's sin and oppression going on. Now, Samuel records the story of Ruth in the book of Ruth at the end of the book of Judges, but it has now been separated into its own book. And see, what happens is, as you remember, in the way Judges is written, the story is told in one pass to add details from one perspective, then the story is told again to add more details, and then Samuel tells the story again to add more details. And the same thing is happening here. After he has told all the story through chapter 21 of the book of Judges, he then tells the story of Ruth. But remember, the chapters were not there when Samuel wrote it. The chapters don't come along until the 13th century A.D. when we put them in. But so it all was together. But Ruth was carved out later on. And then it was put into a separate book. Samuel was about 39 years old at the time of Samson's death. Having served as an aide to the priest named Eli since he was 4 years old. Eli became the high priest 12 years before the death of Samson. And at that time, Samuel was 27 years old and was still an apprentice to be a prophet. You see, you could not be a prophet and recognized as a prophet until you turned 30. So at the age of 27, at Samuel's death, at Samson's death, Samuel was not quite old enough to be a prophet. Samuel was not of the tribe of Levi, so he couldn't, and he was not a descendant of Aaron. So even though he was helping Eli, he could never be a priest because Samuel was of the tribe of Ephraim. He was dedicated at his birth by his parents to be a Nazarite, just like Samson was. And as a child, he served with Eli at the tabernacle in Shiloh. Well, because Samuel was also a Nazarite, no razor ever touched his head either. He wore long hair. Nevertheless, Samuel saw that all that had transpired with Samson firsthand. And he saw what was happening in Israel in the 3 years leading into the fourth year after Samson's death and before Saul was anointed as the first king of Israel. And by age 39, Samuel had surely established himself as a prophet and also a judge. You see, he was at age of 39, he was not now nine years past the age where prophets were recognized. Eli, the high priest, recognized Samuel as a prophet when he was very, very young. His story will be told over in the book of 1 Samuel. And you might ask the question, if Samuel was alive during the life of Samson, why did we not hear about Samuel in the book of Judges? Now, I have been laying the groundwork for the answer through our study of Joshua and Judges because Samuel helped write Judges. In the Hebrew style, the same stories are told several times with new information or that different perspective was added with each pass through that story. And such is the case with the story of Samson. Samuel told the story of what took place with Samson with one pass through the story. Next, Samuel will make another pass through the story to tell us what took place in Israel at the end and after Samson's life. Then he will make another pass through the timeline to tell us what took place in the story of Ruth. And finally, in the book of 1 Samuel, he will make another pass through the story and the timeline to tell his story and to tell the story of King Saul and begin the story of King David. And we will learn much more of his story when we venture over into our next study in the book of 1 Samuel. But for now, as we continue through the story of Samuel, this story gives us Samuel gave us the book of Judges, and we will learn all of the deviance occurring in the nation of Israel in those last days after Samson had died. In these last chapters in Judges, our writer presents us a review of, I've already told you, of the sway of Israel's downfall without a leader in chapter 17. The lessons of the six cycles of sin that led Israel's downfall without a leader were not learned in the 339 years since the death of Joshua. The people were still a nation of defiance of the law of the Lord. They still had this draw to worship false gods. The sway of that draw was great. And we come now to the tragic influence of the sway with a graven image. First, we see the mother's missing money returned. We're in chapter 17 and verse number 1. Now there was a man of the hill country of Ephraim whose name was Micah. And he said to his mother, "The 1,100 pieces of silver which were taken from you, about which you uttered a curse in my hearing, behold, the silver is with me. I took it." And his mother said, "Blessed be my son by the Lord." He then returned the 1,100 pieces of silver to his mother. Samuel was an Ephraimite. And this story that I've just read you begins in his own tribal area of Ephraim. He was the judge after Samson's death. And even though it is not explicitly stated here, the rest of the storyline of the book of Judges was on Samuel's watch. He was an eyewitness to it all. This introductory passage tells us that the mother of Micah thought that her 1,100 pieces of silver had been stolen. These pieces of silver would be shekels. And in chapter 16, we discuss the value of this sum of money of 1,100 pieces of silver. It's interesting that it's the same amount. We might even say that it was possibly this mother's whole life's savings. It was well more than many years' wages at that time. And in fact, it did not go missing. To the mother, it was stolen. To the son, he took it. Did he steal it? We do not know. It is quite possible that Micah had taken the money to hide it from some collection of taxes that might happen, that was going to happen during the Philistine oppression or something like that, that had just ended. And if she did not have that money in her possession, she could not give the Philistines anything when they came around to collect each year. So we do not know the reason, but Micah took the money. But when he heard that his mother thought it was stolen, he admitted that he had it and he returned it to her. She blessed him for giving it back to her. Now the story between Micah and his mother is all well and good until the writer tells us what the mother decided to do with the silver. I call this the mother's missing money dedicated, verse 3b. And his mother said, "I wholly dedicate the silver from my hand to the Lord for my son to make a graven image and a molten image. Now therefore, I will return them to you." It is hard to believe that his mother wants to dedicate the money to the Lord Jehovah. And at the same time, to have that money made into a graven image created for her son to use in his house. She was going to have the images made. She was going to take them to her son once they were made. Surely she knows about the Lord. Surely she trusts in the Lord. What's going on here? Did Micah worship false gods? Was she trying to give a gift to her son that would make him happy, even though she did not believe in false gods? Or because she did believe in false gods? We do not know the answer to those questions. But we can assume rightly that she was willing to give a gift to Micah that she might not wish to use for her own benefit to worship her Lord Jehovah. We often do that, you know. We often participate in sinful things that others are doing that we would never do on our own and in our own home court. That must be the case here with this mother and her son. While she probably did not worship false gods, if worshiping false gods made her son happy, she was willing to participate in anything that would bring him happiness. Let me tell you this before we get there in the story. Her decision to participate in this evil will have ramifications on many people in the future after the images are made. And so it is true today. Many times Christians participate at the edge of something evil and actually jumpstart the evil that will come on many people. And so we see the mother's missing money transformed into graven images in verse number 4. So when he returned the silver to his mother took 200 pieces of silver and gave them to the silversmith, who made them into a graven image and a molten image, and they were in the house of Micah. And as promised, the writer tells us that these graven images were placed in Micah's house for him to use and to worship. Not only did the graven images make it to Micah's house for him to use and to worship, but Micah turns around and makes them into a shrine. We see the mother's missing money enshrined next in verse number 5. And the man Micah had a shrine, and he made an ephod and household idols, and consecrated one of his sons that he might become his priest. In those days, there was no king in Israel, and every man did what was right in his own eyes.